Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot.
Well, hello, everybody. My name is Peter Werwine, and I am Managing Editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. And today, I have the pleasure of speaking to Dr. Rodrigo Cerda. He's on our editorial advisory board, so we've met and talked on occasion. But he's also been recently promoted. He's now Senior Vice President of Health Services and the Chief Medical Officer at Independence Blue Cross. He's been with the company since 2019. He was formerly in a position in charge of clinical care transformation. So thanks for making time today.
Thanks for having me.
So, I've been in these managed care vineyards for, it's getting to be close to 10 years. And when I came into this area of healthcare, I encountered this title, Chief Medical Officer at a health plan. And, you know, I didn't know what the heck that was or what the person did, but the notion that I've been carrying around in my head when I see somebody in your new role is that these are the people who bring medical expertise to bear on coverage decisions at a health plan. There's a procedure for a condition, and it's the chief medical officer who advises the other people in the insurance company about sort of the pros and cons of the procedure, efficacy, and also some cost effectiveness issues. So that's my take on what a chief medical officer is. Have I got it right, or is it different? Has it changed?
Yeah, I think the role of chief medical officer has been evolving. It's a good question, because I would bet that the role is probably slightly different for each health plan. I think it certainly is what you've said. If you kind of sum it up as you know, advising on medical policy and being the chief clinical spokesperson. For me, and in my role, I think part of the essential core of it is driving the kind of health and healthcare outcomes that we want to see. So the questions I ask myself are, you know, what are we doing to drive better quality, better experience, better total cost of care in an equitable way, and how are we measuring that impact? So it's a bit broader, right? And I think that the tools on that I have kind of in my team include some of the classic things you would think of as the health plan tools to deliver those outcomes, like case and condition management, medical policy, utilization management. But in addition to that, we have teams that are focused on working hand in hand with our provider network to drive better outcomes. Like we have, for example, population health specialists in primary care offices. We do a lot of joint work with the health systems in our region and with oversight from joint value committees. And so, you know, we're on the same team as the clinical and operational teams of providers in delivering those outcomes, you know, really underpinned by the fact that we have outcomes-based payment incentives. So we win together, lose together when we deliver higher value. We also have a team that's focused on evaluating and improving provider experience, including how we communicate with providers to figure out how do we communicate more clearly and you know, have that kind of bi-directional approach. And then finally, the other piece of the team that's really important to mention is we have a group that's really focused on finding new opportunities to improve value, and I kind of defined it in that cost quality experience, evaluating them, implementing, scaling where appropriate to kind of facilitate positive change in how healthcare is delivered and how what kind of health outcomes come out of it. So that's, you know, within the team. And we, you know, I think key partnerships for me and for our team is with contracting and reimbursement, where again, you know, kind of helps set the rules of the game so that, you know, we're on the same page with providers, where the right doing the right thing is also the right thing to do financially. And with quality management, where, you know, we certainly partner as well.
It sounds like a huge portfolio. So you must have a number of people working for you. And are there responsibilities divided by conditions? So you have a team that looks at cardiovascular disease and your team that looks at diabetes. Is it divided by population? So you have people who look at, you know, your pediatric population, or how do you possibly organize this?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's one that's evolving for us as well. I think the way that for the most part we're organized, and probably most health plans would be, is around the tools that we have at our disposal to drive those outcomes. So as I said, you know, we all want to drive that triple aim, right, and across different disease sets. But we, you know, you can do that by setting medical policy. What things do we cover? What things do we not? You can do that by sort of having case management, where, you know, for our members that are at highest risk or kind of coming in and out of the hospital, we engage with them and help them find, you know, that setting of care and navigate the health system. We have a utilization management team that ensures that you know, that our members are getting the right level of care. So these are things that are traditionally you know, source of sometimes of some disagreement among the healthcare infrastructure. But those things, we're saying, hey, does this person merit an inpatient level of care or not? Is this the right kind of drug, or actually is there a more you know, a higher value alternative that the person should be on? So, you know, we divide ourselves right now according to the kind of tool we have at our disposal to drive the outcomes, but we are trying to work more and more as, you know, cross-disciplinary team focused on driving the outcomes. And so we have some initiatives, for example, on kidney care. Now we're having a, you know, focus on post-acute care, where time after somebody's in the hospital, looking at diabetes and trying to look at, well, if we were to take all the tools at our disposal, including, you know, vendors or others that might come into the space, what does our overall strategy look like for that? How are we what outcomes are we targeting for that? And how are we going to know if it's working or not? So it's an answer of, you know, this is how we are. And increasingly we do want to, you know, really be outcomes focused and bring all the tools together to work as complements.
Are the people at the health plan whose responsibilities are to manage prior authorization, which is, you know, the classic insurance managed care function, is that part of your group? Do those people report?
Yeah.
To you?
Yes.
And, yeah, you know, prior authorization has been a burr under the saddle in managed care for years now. The doctors feel like the health plan is looking over their shoulder. The speed at which it happens can be aggravating for both the provider and patient. Do you have anything going on in terms of prior authorization that is looking to improve the process? Is it a problem that you are are working to solve, or is it something that
Yeah, I mean, I think prior authorization, and look, I've been on both sides, right? And if you can look at it as sides, right? I've been on the provider side as well. I feel like if we didn't have to do something like prior authorization, I don't think anybody would be really eager to do it. But the reality is that, you know, if we didn't do it, the cost of healthcare would be even higher than it is today, right? And we live in a country that has the highest per capita health expenditure in the world by far, without really justifying better outcomes. And you know, our city, the area around Philadelphia is no exception. And in some ways, like a lot of big cities with great academic centers and so on, it's worse in some ways in terms of per capita cost. So, you know, this is a real problem. And we're looking actively for where can we find alternatives to that. And I think value-based care, value-based payment is one avenue for that, right? Where, you know, to the extent that we're all on the same page about quality experience and cost, and we share in the outcomes of that, and you can think about, as you kind of deepen those partnerships with providers, can providers take on, you know, more of that role of doing the policing, if you will, and making sure that we kind of uphold a level of value that we expect. And we're also looking at, you know, how can we make the process easier? Some of the things that we're doing, you know, today include having more surveys where if you meet a certain set of clinical criteria, you get an auto approval, right? We do meet sort of the expectations in terms of timeliness of response, and that's really important to us. The other things that we're looking at are, you know, are there opportunities to make it smoother in workflows, right? So to better connect with provider medical records and, you know, make, rather than having to fill out a survey or ask for information from the provider about our member, we could have that information and say, you know, based on what we see from the data that we've got, this is an approval as well. And, you know, these are the criteria, right? So we want to do that. We want to make it smoother. We have no interest in making it hard for our members. But again, experience is really important. So it's something where, yes, we're looking to evolve. But right now, we do need it, right? And if we didn't have it, cost of care would be higher. And, you know, across, there would be some care that wouldn't meet kind of necessity criteria or appropriateness.
So I know you're just a week into this job, right? A week and a few days, maybe. Yeah. But of course, even before the announcement, you were getting ready. So are there one or two things that you hope to focus on and accomplish in the early going in your new role at IBX? Do you have your to-do list, and you have the 1, 2, and 3 on the top?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of things obviously that we have, and we sort of talked about some of them in terms of the targets of how I'd measure success. But I think, you know, if you were to say what are the things that are sort of the immediate, right? I think one thing that I feel like is an immediate challenge for all of us in healthcare is that we've got a healthcare workforce that even before the pandemic was sort of suffering from some degrees of burnout, and you know, especially now with this latest Omicron wave, has been, you know, even more frayed in this kind of 2 years of sustained crisis. And how can we use this crisis to evolve, to have better care? And I think part of that is really kind of working in partnership and trying to address some of these issues that kind of make healthcare difficult to practice, where, you know, providers really did get into healthcare to help people and to to take care of patients. And, you know, when they're not able to do that and when they have to spend more time at their computers, that's a challenge. So I think that, that's something that, you know, it's going to be really difficult to address. But as we hopefully start to emerge from this pandemic, you know, that's something that we're going to have to tackle, right? What does healthcare look like in the future? We have a chance to define that before we settle back into, you know, a status quo that where we were before, right? A second aspect.
You've referenced partnership, of course, but burnout would be, and, you know, also just labor shortage would seem to be something that, you know, the a healthcare provider organization would be principally concerned with. Is that really something that an insurance plan can reach into in an effective way? And if so, how? I would think that's sort of an important problem, but maybe not one that would be something that an insurer would be thinking about.
Yeah, I mean, normally I would say the answer to that is yes. I just think it's gotten to the level where, you know, this is a problem for everyone. And I think part of it is, you know, when, you know, the classic model, and part of the reason why it's difficult is that, you know, when you pay mostly fee for service, that fee for service reimburses for, you know, a physician or advanced practice practitioners or advanced practitioners time and efforts, but doesn't support as much a kind of team-based care. And so you end up asking, you know, a highly trained primary care doc to do, you know, everything. And so they kind of die this death of a thousand cuts of having a million things to do themselves. And so for me, it's you know, our role is in really understanding more, having conversations with providers as we've been having, but also thinking about alternative payment mechanisms that really support team-based approach, where it's not just about billing for, you know, in 15-minute increments. It's about, you know, what are you doing to take care of this population? And, you know, we have some ways in which we do that, right? So all of, you know, our HMO populations are capitated in primary care. And, you know, we're thinking about how can we, you know, improve on that and have more of the payments be based on outcomes, which can give, in some ways, you know, when done right, it can give providers more leeway to focus on what matters, and, you know, less on saying, well, you know, did I check all the boxes in the 15-minute increment?
Yeah, I guess, so I know you've been working on value-based care. So you see value-based care and sort of a restructuring of the healthcare delivery that might result of that as being a way of coping with some of the burnout and perhaps even some of the labor shortage. Pivoting just a bit, social determinants of health has sort of entered the healthcare vernacular the last few years. And certainly there's great intuitive appeal of traveling upstream to events and conditions that form people's health. You know, is it really anything more than, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure at some level? But maybe we're past the point where we can just, you know, feel like we're accomplishing something just by talking about it. Now it comes time to the doing. So I guess I'm curious to how you see, you know, where we're at with addressing social determinants of health and whether which social determinants to attack and in which way is maybe something that has sort of come into the orbit of what a chief medical officer does. Yeah. Yeah. That's a long question.
Yeah. Because it's certainly not an easy one, but it's one that we are thinking about a lot. I think, we recently refreshed our overall strategy and advancing health equity is really one of the kind of core pillars of what we're trying to do. And part of that, not only racial equity, but also addressing some of the social determinants of health. It's a hard question to answer of, what's the right border between, what a health plan does, what government does, what social sector does. And I'm not going to say that I've got, the right answer. Part of that is that we're trying to actually work together with, providers and local departments of health. So there's a Accelerate Health Equity initiative involving a lot of the actors in the region to think about how we can do this, right? Some of the things that we've been doing is, number one, we're sort of measuring and finding out, what are the drivers? How can we address them? We are working with a company called Signify Community and a few others on not only kind of measuring and recording, what are the social determinants of health for each individual, but trying to help connect those individuals with tools that might address that, right? So even if we're not necessarily going to be fixing everybody's housing situation, we know that there are many organizations that do that. And so how can we facilitate, the right resources getting to those individuals, looking at things like housing, nutrition, transportation. I think our approach to this is going to continue to evolve because there's no simple answer here, but we know it's an important issue. We think that the right answer is some combination of things that we can provide and things that we can help our members access in the community. And we're committed to making an impact there.
Yeah, I think that question of where the boundary line of healthcare is sort of an interesting one. It clearly seems to be more than just providing pills and doing procedures, but it could also balloon to, take on everything. So I don't know how how you go about picking your spots precisely, but I guess one thing that you think maybe that IBX do is it can be sort of a referral service to other people who tackle these or agent organizations who tackle these problems.
Yeah, I think the answer is somewhere in partnership with resources that exist. I don't think the independents can or should expand to embark all services. I don't think that makes sense. But we are trying to figure out, where do we provide more direct services? And there's different models, right? In the UK, for example, they had a kind of social prescribing program where, a provider could write a script for a cooking class or for, a group, and they've done some interesting work on even addressing epidemic of loneliness, right? And these things, I think we should be open to thinking about new models of what is healthcare, because again, it's sort of like the older sort of split between physical health and behavioral health. It really doesn't, you're really going with one hand tied behind your back unless you're really thinking about the individual as a whole. And that whole includes not just their diabetes, but their depression and their living situation. And you can't really fix their diabetes without thinking about all those other factors.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch it unfold. So we're about out of time, but just one last question. You trained to be, you spent a good part of your relative youth, training to be a physician, and now you're, a physician executive, I guess we call you guys. Do you miss the direct provision of healthcare? Do you sometimes wish that you were taking care of patients? And
I do. That's the honest answer. I've always gotten a lot of energy from doing that. I've been trying to find ways to sort of safely volunteer my time because I do get something out of it. But, trying to figure out how to do that with appropriate malpractice coverage without, is the challenge. But I do miss it. The caveat I'll say there is that I'm also incredibly energized by the privilege of this position and really shaping healthcare in the region. We are the leading health plan in southeastern Pennsylvania. We control over $7 billion of healthcare expenditure in the region, and we're in many states. So we have that privilege to really shape how healthcare is delivered, and thinking about how we do that is exciting, right? And there are some limitations, being on the provider side, when you want to practice a certain way, it's the right way to practice, but the economics of how you're paid don't support that, it could be really frustrating. And that's kind of the connection I was making to burnout, right? Where part of what I want to do is I really want to think about how we set the rules to the game and how we kind of, what role we play to make care, more like what it should be and to drive the outcomes we want to drive. So, on the one hand, yes, I miss it, but on the other hand, it's really pretty formative to how I think about the kind of impact I want to have as chief medical officer.
Yeah, in other contexts, they call it the power of the purse, right? Nothing is quite as powerful as the power of the purse. So, I've enjoyed our conversation. You've given me some stuff to think about, and maybe we'll check in at your 1 year anniversary and see how things have gone. So thanks for the time today.
Great, I love that.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.